Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I was told by my legit mates in wrestling, people hate you, or people will hate you. I was like, why? And they were like, you'll find out.
How are you feeling about North at the minute?
So are we here to shoot the promo, or do you want me to actually tell you what I feel? Because if you want me shooting, then I'll tell you exactly what I think of North, what I think of the moron punters that go to North, and you can turn the radiators off, you can save on the heating, because I'm about to get hot. Look at Shreddy. Imagine being a promoter and not pulling the trigger on this. Bowers should be taking Brit Rest into a gold rush. It's like he's walking down the street and he's just found a bag full of £20 notes. He's like, oh, you know what? I don't want that. I don't want that money. He just keeps walking past.
How are you feeling about those sort of chants?
Well, he asked us stupid questions. Why are you asking stupid questions? Is that what you came down here for? This great white is surrounded by a sea of stupidity. And that stupidity is the North fans singing the silly little songs, throwing the toilet roll in the ring. When I'm up there beating fools down, it pisses me off. Everybody at North wants to start calling Shreddy a Well, maybe I'll start acting like that and get all the opportunities that I do deserve.
It's a rare live in-person visit to Cultaholic Island. And today it's Shreddy.
We're working to the hard cam, brother.
Welcome to Cultaholic Island. This is something we've been trying to get in the books for a few weeks now.
It is.
And we finally made it out.
Keep getting bummed. Oh. I know my place in the canton.
Now I know how Mike Bennett felt last week when he kept doing it. Phenomenal wrestler.
Some might say. Not
long into the game.
Not that long now.
Bodybuilder extraordinaire with plans on Mr. Universe.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
But more importantly, what's your best Pokemon?
Best Pokemon.
Best Pokemon.
Got to be Charizard, hasn't it?
Why is it Charizard?
Because he's the daddy. Just like Shreddy. The gas tank daddy. You think Pokemon, you think Charizard.
Do you though? Because I would. Because surely Pikachu is the
I think, okay. So the stereotypical Pokemon. That. I think when it comes to Pokemon cards, you instantly think.
Right.
Right. When you were a kid, we probably can all relate to the story. There was always some kid in school, on the schoolyard, oh, I've just got a Charizard, but my mum wanted me bringing it to school. Because it was the rarest cards. Like, that's what.
So were you the kid that had the Charizard that his mum wouldn't let me to school?
I never had a Charizard until quite, I had to do a lot of trading to get a Charizard. I wasn't lucky enough to pull one as a kid from a pack. But I did get one. I did get one in the end.
Who was the kid in your school that wasn't allowed to bring his Charizard in? So can we name him?
I will name him because I don't even know him anymore. But there was a lad called Mark who had a sister 2 years older than us, and he was the kid who had a Charizard, but his mum wouldn't let him bring it. So I was like, can we swear on this? I don't know.
Yeah, of course you fucking can.
Get fucked, Mark. You never had a Charizard.
Frick. Mark's the first one buried by Shreddy on Desert Island Graps.
I brought that shovel with me.
Hashtag get fucked, Mark. Yeah. Get that trending. Now, for those who don't know, obviously, because you, especially during lockdown, you did loads of videos about Pokemon cards and the collection of cards. Yeah. It's big business, isn't it?
I thought you were going to say, for those who don't know, this is Shreddy.
Oh.
That's what I thought you were building.
People are going to get to know you. Getting to know you. But more the whole idea of like, because I've known you for years and we're going to all introduce you. But the Pokemon card game and the collecting of them and that sort of thing, it's big business, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So during lockdown, just like talking about wrestlers in particular, I think every wrestler, or at least all like my friends in wrestling, when lockdown came and we didn't have wrestling, we all found something different to do. So like, I noticed loads of people started streaming and doing like Twitch and things like that. I started doing videos on Pokemon cards, just because we had all this free time that wasn't being occupied by wrestling. So I started doing stuff on Pokemon cards because, yeah, I've been into collecting. When I was a little kid, then I got back into it when I was a student at uni. And then I've kind of been on and off with Pokemon ever since then, really. But lockdown, nothing else to do, kind of got back into Pokemon in like a bit of a heavy way.
What got you into it when you, what got you back into it when you were at uni?
So what got me back into it was, so I never really fully grew out of Pokemon, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So I was like a 90s kid, so I was 8, 9 year old when Pokemon first came out. Played Red and Blue and Yellow, played Gold and Silver, which is known as like Gen 1 and Gen 2. And I stopped at Gen 2. Then they made like more Pokemon games. Then they remade Pokemon Red and Blue for the Game Boy Advance when I was still in school at the time. I'd have been maybe 14 or 15. And I was like, right, this is what's got me back into Pokemon. But what got me back into collecting was when I was a student at uni and I came across my old childhood Pokemon cards, looked up what they're worth on eBay, rather than wanting to sell them, something clicked in my head. I was like, right, they don't cost that much money. I can start completing the sets I never had as a kid. So I started buying some cards, selling some cards, and then just got back into collecting, but kind of buying and selling on eBay to help grow my own collection. And I did that heavily from about 2008 till 2013 or 14. Then I kind of completed all of my collection goals. I'm not saying I had the biggest collection in the world, because I don't.
But you had your own goals that you set.
I pretty much was like, all right, I'm done. I'm happy with that collection now. So there wasn't really as much left for me to buy. I didn't have the interest there to be, you know, buying and selling as regularly, because I pretty much had everything that I wanted within reason.
Mm.
And then I'd buy little bits and pieces here and there over the years. But yeah, what got me back into it originally was just I came across the cards in uni, saw that there was a way for me to complete some of these cards, collections that I didn't have when I was a kid for fairly cheap. Started buying and selling them, and I was able to kind of use that money to just fund the growth of the collection. And yeah, and because I'm a nerd.
And because you're a nerd.
Short answer, because I'm a nerd. Yeah.
So it's, you know, without being gauche about it, because obviously, you know, Logan Paul is someone that collects them as well. Yeah, in fact, I think it was WrestleMania where he had like his card.
I think it was an illustrated Pikachu, PSA 10. Yeah, I think like one in the world or something, or two in the world of those.
And he had one of those too.
He came out with one of them. Like, yeah, what a flex.
As I was going to say, as a wrestler and a Pokemon fan,
I'm like a Poundland Logan Paul. I've never been on WWE. I don't have the PSA 10 illustrated Pikachu. I have all the same interests as Logan Paul, just I've got a lot less followers and a lot less money.
If you were going to do a WrestleMania entrance with a flex of one of your Pokemon cards, which one would it be?
So one of two cards it would be. No, one of three cards. My personal favourite sentimental card is probably the first edition Charizard I've got. It's not PSA 10, so it's not worth loads. It's PSA 7. And I had that when I got back into collecting, kind of as a uni student. It would be maybe that. It would maybe be a PSA 10 Shining Charizard, which is an expensive card. Or it wouldn't be a card, it would be a briefcase wanker. It's a Team Rocket's 20th anniversary, like Japanese promo set that they did. Black briefcase, got the red Team Rocket logo on there, but it's got two promo cards in there. Very rare, like very limited like runs of these cards. But the artwork is like, there's a Giovanni card, is probably my favourite artwork in Pokemon ever. Came out, I think, in 2016. It was the 20th anniversary like edition collector's set thing. So I would maybe come out with that because I use the briefcase as a weapon.
Use his weapon.
There you go.
That's genius. There That's genius. Go. I like the fact there'll be people listening who are wrestlers, wrestling fans, and also Pokemon fans. And
also known as fucking nerds.
Fucking nerds. All welcome here. Yeah. But we are here to talk about wrestling. In particular, three wrestling matches that you, Shreddy, would watch while stranded on a desert island. So matches of any promotion, anytime, anywhere. Don't have to be five-star classics or six in the Tokyo Dome. They can literally be matches that have a special significance to you.
Yeah.
What would you like your first one to be?
So the one that always jumps out to me is, and this is probably going to be like, there'll be wrestling fans groaning as I'm about to say this, would probably be the WrestleMania 2000 main event, the Fatal 4-Way. And the reason for that is that time frame of wrestling for me is very sentimental, because I'm like one of seven kids. So I've got two brothers, four sisters. My brothers are a lot older than me. So I remember when I was getting into wrestling as a kid, my oldest brother would watch wrestling with me. Now, he's a lot older than me. When I was a kid, he was up going drinking. So like that shows you the age gap between us. But on the run-up to WrestleMania 2000, he would cut his nights out with his mates drinking short. He'd be out on the piss, you know, he'd cut that short to be home on a Friday night to watch Raw on Sky Sport at 10 o'clock with me.
Oh.
On that build up to WrestleMania, because he was just as invested as me as a little kid. And I remember he taped WrestleMania 2000 on like VHS tape for me. I woke up Monday morning, which was a school morning, fast forwarded straight to that main event, and we watched it before I went to school that morning.
Brilliant.
Well, I mean, we can talk more about the match and break that. I know the WrestleMania 2000 main event is considered like not one of the worst matches, but kind of underwhelming for a lot of wrestling fans. But there's so much like that time, like that is what caps off a very sentimental kind of time for me because of like that interaction I had with my brother and watching. I just got so many good memories of being at school, playing the SmackDown games, just that time frame I'm very nostalgic for. And at the time, The Rock and Mick Foley. The Rock is probably my favourite wrestler ever.
Mm.
But when I was a kid, The Rock and Mick Foley were me two guys. I remember asking for either The Rock's book or Mick Foley's book as a kid for Christmas. Different brother, not the one I watched wrestling with, but one of my other brothers. Christmas morning, I knew it was a book so I could feel it. Opened it. He got me both books.
Oh.
I had The Rock's book, Mick Foley's book. So it's just that entire time frame I'm very nostalgic for. And yeah, like very nice. And I kind of see that WrestleMania four-way as being like, not the peak, because then you went on to Rock and Triple H, who had like pretty much a year-long feud in the Backlash match the month after WrestleMania. That's when Austin did the run-in and things like that. So I remember that very fondly as well. But that main event, because you had Mick Foley coming out of retirement, going back into retirement, Rock, Triple H, and then you just randomly had Big Show in there as well, which is what it is.
It's one of those matches. It's as you say, it's a bit divisive because it kind of broke a lot of WrestleMania rules. Because for the long, I think it was the first WrestleMania.
Time a heel walked out with the belt.
First time a heel walked out with a belt. That's the big one. It was the first time, I think, outside of WrestleMania 1 that it wasn't a singles match that headlined WrestleMania.
You could be right there, actually.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head, I can't think, but you're probably right.
Because like, the triple threat match only really came into vogue in the WWF in 97.
It was late in the night, and I think probably the first triple threat was at 20 with Triple H. Main event, sorry. I think the first triple threat Mania main event will have been Triple H, Michaels and Benoit.
Yeah, and that's 04.
Because I remember not long ago listening on Foley's podcast, he proposed to have a triple threat. I think it was Rock Austin. There might be a Mania 15. He wanted to be part of that main event. And according to Foley on his podcast, Michaels was the one who said shouldn't be a triple threat. Not to bury Foley. It wasn't to like be like malicious to Foley. It was just like, I should be a singles match. So they went with that. I think it was Rock and Austin at 15. And then fast forward to 2004, Foley makes a joke of it and Conrad's asking about like how he feels about it. It was Michaels who was part of the first triple threat in Mania, like as a Mania main event.
He shoehorned himself in there.
Yeah, yeah.
He got himself in there. Yeah. But I remember that time, there was a lot of nervousness because it was, Steve Austin was injured.
Yeah.
So the company were really nervous about that WrestleMania because their star draw wasn't there.
If you look back, overloading the main event,
it kind of helps.
Like, I think it's like, is that thing where they didn't have the big star. I mean, for me as a kid, I saw The Rock as like the big star.
Yeah.
But as you get older and you go back and like watch like, you know, you hear more the financials and the business side. It's like, yeah, Austin was obviously the big star. But when you're a kid and you like The Rock's your favorite wrestler, it's, oh, now The Rock's like the main guy. But yeah, I can totally see that. Like they had Austin gone. So it's like, right, rather than just having a singles, because Rock and Austin could have main evented easily. They'd already done it. They went on to do it the year after. The Mebbies didn't think Triple H was a big enough star yet to just have Rock and Triple H as that. So they put a couple of stars in. And then there's the promo, the poster work and stuff of, I think it was meant to be Jericho.
There was, speculation.
I don't know if that was instead of Foley or instead of Big Show, but there's posters of Jericho as part of that four-way. But I can't remember if he was meant to.
I think it was instead of Big Show.
Maybe. I can't remember who it is, but yeah, he was meant to be, which I didn't find out until years and years later.
Yeah, I know. It was one of those things that was speculated that Jericho and Triple H didn't quite see eye to eye on a lot of things, which meant that he was sort of pushed out of that match.
Yeah, yeah.
What did young Shreddy make of his hero, The Rock, losing at WrestleMania?
A fuming. Absolutely fuming. Like, as a kid, like, yeah, I say The Rock is, you know, The Rock is my guy. But so as a kid, absolutely gutted. But then when you look back, The Rock lost a ton of big matches. Mm-hmm. Like, The Rock lost... I don't think he'd ever won a Mania main event till he wrestled Cena, which was, The Rock had pretty much finished his career, and then he came back for that match with Cena, because Rock Hogan wasn't the main event, as in the last match of the card.
Yeah.
So I think that was the first time he won against Cena.
And his wins at WrestleMania in general were quite few and far between.
Yeah, they're not that good. You've got, I don't know what The Rock's first Mania was.
It was, Rikishi, WrestleMania 13.
The Sultan, yeah.
Sorry, the Sultan. He won that. Okay, so won.
Then it would have been 14.
Against Austin and lost.
Yeah, was that 14?
Oh, no. I'm talking out my backside.
Yeah, it was 16.
He lost.
15.
He faced Ken Shamrock.
I've got a feeling he'll have lost against Shamrock.
He lost, but then the ref reversed the decision.
Was that for the IC belt?
Yeah.
Then was it
Shamrock wouldn't let go of the ankle lock.
Yeah. Then was Austin the air after for the...
Austin.
Then the four-way.
Four-way lost.
Austin.
He lost again.
Hogan won. Which he won. Austin.
Won.
Evolution handicap match
lost,
and then
one. Then he vanished in 21.
Then it was back to Cena.
Then Cena, and then
which for me, like, I know The Rock came back, he won the belt and everything, but like for me, The Rock's main run or The Rock's main career finished in 2004. Was it when he lost to Goldberg?
Yeah, that was his last. I mean,
the three, and he came back for the main. Yeah,
he recently put something on Instagram where he. It was the anniversary of Rock versus Brock.
It was like a 6 or 7 year career and he was done.
Yeah, and it was, and he said, like, you know, this was the last match and I did the business on my way out.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of like the end of him as a full-time
wrestler, performer. Yeah, it was.
And then he came back in time to beat Austin, then lose to Goldberg.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was just then sporadic from there.
Slightly off topic, but still somewhat on topic.
We'll do that a lot, don't worry.
What you said about how did I feel when, as a kid, The Rock losing at Mania. When... Goldberg debuted, and randomly I was talking this about to Alice, like, literally last week in the car. She asked me, like, oh, what did you think when Goldberg came in? So I was like, I didn't give a fuck about Goldberg coming in. Like, The Rock was my guy. I wasn't a WCW kid. I was a WWF kid. Like, I very rarely watched WCW as a kid. Not because I didn't like it, because we didn't get it. I didn't know where to watch it. Whereas WWF was like the biggest stars in the world to me. So when Goldberg came in, I knew who he was, but I was like, I don't want to beat The Rock.
He's not as good as The Rock.
Yeah, that's what I was like. So I was like, I don't care about Goldberg. And then when he had his run for that, like, that year, like, I was never bothered. I wasn't excited about him becoming champion because I much preferred Triple H over Goldberg.
And so you're kind of the archetype, like, fan that Vince McMahon always aimed the product at.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Where, like, if they haven't been here, then they haven't been anywhere.
And so... I am 100% that I was when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Just like every other kid was my age. And if you say otherwise, you're bullshitting.
Yeah.
Like, you look on Twitter and you'll see fans now going, oh, but this guy. When we were kids, at least in the UK, WCW was hard to watch. It wasn't like as readily available as what WWF was. So we saw, like, for me as a kid, and again, there's going to be fans out there groaning as I'm about to say this, the Invasion storyline when I was a kid was class.
Yeah.
It was absolutely mint. When you go back years later and then you learn more about WCW and I've watched it on YouTube and the network, it's like, I look back now, I'm like, yeah, it was shit compared to what it could have been. But as a kid, it was class because they were able, yes, it wasn't WCW, it wasn't ECW, but the Alliance, they were able to put the Dudley Boys there, ECW guys. They were able to put Rhino there, ECW guy. Stone Cold there is like the leader. Yeah, a bit silly. But they were able to just build a team of bad guys and a team of good guys. And as a kid, you always want the good guys to win. Like, Star Wars, my favorite character is Vader. But as a kid, you want to see Vader get beat. You want to see Vader get killed. As you grow older, you just want to go for, like, what's cool. But as a kid, and, you know, wrestling is largely aimed at kids a lot of the time, good guys and good guys and bad guys when done well works. It's simple, but it works.
What was life like growing up in such a big family? Because you mentioned earlier about how many brothers and sisters you've got.
Yeah,
that's a big family.
One of seven kids.
Where are you in the pecking order there?
Second youngest. And there's a big generational gap between, there's a sister 2 years younger than me, a sister 2 years older. Then there's a big gap. Then there's another four kids. Mm. So my older sister, I'm not like, when I was younger, I'm not overly close to. Now I'm like closer with her. But when I was a kid, she'd already moved. She lived in a different town and things like that. I was really closer with me, like my brother who watched wrestling, because he was into computer games. He was into wrestling. So I was like, when I was a kid, I was like his shadow. And a lot of what I'm into now, he's grown out of it now, but I'm still into the stuff I was when I was a kid. So yeah, I think a lot of the things I'm interested in now, it's because my brother got me into it and I just never grew up with it.
Was it with terms of parents and stuff with so many kids?
Same mum and dad for them. Yeah.
Is it a fight for attention at that age, or is it something that you noticed?
I wouldn't say fight for attention. No, I don't think I ever. I think because there was that generational gap.
There was such a gap between.
It was like there was three kids, which I think was pretty manageable for me, mum and dad. So yeah. I never felt like, I wasn't one of these kids who was like, I need the attention of my mum and dad. Like, I always felt like I got that attention, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
So was it a case of, you know, if it's not me, Brian, it was a case of like your mum and dad had three kids, took a long break from it and went, you know what, I think we want some more.
I think they probably just wanted more benefits, to be honest. I think those child tax credits ran out, so they're like, right, we need to renew this. I think it's me mum is just one of these women who is just a natural mother. The honest answer is the benefits. Yeah. That's the honest answer, but I'll give the more PC answer if you
She's
like.
She's a natural mother.
She's a natural mother. She's very lovely, our Linda. No, I think genuinely my mum is just one of, because we've got grandkids in the family. I don't have kids. They won't be getting grandkids off me. But my brothers and sisters have got kids and stuff now. And my mum, if she's not looking after kids, I think she's bored.
Yeah.
Like, so she's just one of these women who, so my mum was one of seven as well. She was the oldest one. So I think she was brought up raising her siblings. She had my oldest sister like when she was 19, 20 year old. So I think it's just, she's kind of like that, got that maternal instinct or something.
Yeah.
I think she's just like that natural mother. So I think that's why I had as many kids as what they had. And then we've got grandkids now. My mum loves looking after the grandkids. So I think that's why there's so many of us.
Why was your reaction to not having kids like the crumple of the face, pushing of the hands?
I mean,
there's no wrong answer. Like,
no.
Because like Alex and I, we go through this conversation. Yeah, Neither of us are in a position where we go, we don't really want kids ourselves. So I get it. I'm just intrigued.
I mean, there's probably a deeper answer to this. I think because I grew up with a family, with parents, I don't come from a privileged background at all. Like, don't get me wrong, I didn't grow up, I didn't have a bad childhood, because you hear stories of some kids, you know, being abused when they're growing up and things like that. I don't want to, for one second, paint out that my childhood was like that, because it wasn't. But there was a lot of stuff that I probably missed out on when I was a kid for whatever reason. Maybe it's lack of money in the family, parents not being bothered to do stuff. I don't know what it is, but there was definitely things that, like, I wanted to do when I was a kid. My friends would be able to do. Wasn't a thing for me. So I think, like, that's maybe part of the reason. But then as I grew up, I almost look at my mum and dad and I think, like, as much as, like, they've dedicated their life to bringing, you know, seven kids up and raising kids and stuff like that, that life for me is no life at all. And there's not a right or wrong answer. This is just my take on it. I would hate to have the life that my mum or my dad has had, because their life has just been looking after kids, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, raising a family. Whereas when I was a kid, I wanted to be a wrestler. And I was told by my older sisters, that's stupid, you'll never be a wrestler. Or that's stupid, why do you want to be a wrestler? So from a very young age, I wanted to be a wrestler. Then when I was a teenager, I started lifting in the gym, I wanted to be a bodybuilder. And I was told, why do you want to be a bodybuilder? You'll never be a bodybuilder. It's like, yeah, I'm not a professional bodybuilder. I'm not like making a full-time living wrestling. So yeah, what they've said is right. But the stuff I wanted to do when I was a kid, I had more than, like, I had an aspiration of more than just getting a 9-to-5 and having a family. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think the things that I wanted to achieve with my life are probably quite selfish things. Like, bodybuilding's one of the most selfish lifestyles you can have.
Is it?
Bodybuilding, in terms of the amount of time you've got to spend in the gym, the amount of time you've got to spend preparing food, the limitations. So when I was 19, I stopped drinking. I've not drank alcohol since I was 19. Because the bodybuilding lifestyle doesn't go hand in hand with going out every weekend with your mates on the piss. It's just going to be detrimental to that. So the bodybuilding lifestyle is very selfish in the sense of, like, if I need to be spending X amount of hours training, eating, preparing food, I can't do this because it will conflict with this meal times, blah, blah, blah. It's quite selfish. Wrestling, again, very time consuming. So from a fairly young age, like from a teenager, I just had no aspirations of wanting kids, because what I want to achieve with my life, whether I achieve it or not, is irrelevant. But what I want to aim to achieve, I just think if I had a kid, it would make everything so much harder. If I was responsible for some, you know, raising a kid,
yeah,
it would just make everything else so much harder.
No, I get that. I totally get that. You mentioned about, like, when you were a kid, you wanted to be a wrestler. Now, obviously, a lot of people watch wrestling. Not many people go on to do it.
Yeah.
But what made you want to actually go, I don't want to just watch this, I want to be doing it?
I think because wrestling, and there's not a single moment, it's not like, oh, I watched this match and that made me want to be a wrestler. There wasn't a moment like that for me. I think it's just because I loved it so much from a very young age. Like I said, I've got the older brothers. I never remember wrestling not being on in my house. I never remember wrestling not being part of my life. Even when I was like 3-4 years old, I wasn't necessarily a wrestling fan at that young of an age, but I remember it being on. I remember the blue mats. I remember, you know, Undertaker, Bret Hart matches, Yokozuna coming out with a casket and stuff. I remember those moments, which happened in the early 90s when I had been 4 or 5 years old or something. So I think because I was kind of, I always knew what wrestling was, that as I got a little bit older and I understood it more, I just, for whatever reason, I just became a wrestling fan. And I liked it so much, I just thought, I want to do that. And then you go to secondary school and a lot of my mates grew out of wrestling because it's not cool. Like when you're in primary school, it's the coolest thing. But then when you go to secondary school and it's like, oh, that's fake. Why are you watching that? And it's like not cool to like it anymore. I was one of the kids who stuck with it and I never grew out of wrestling. So I think it's just for a reason I can't really put into words. I just loved wrestling. And I was like, that's what I want to do.
It's always the thing, that's which is always walk beside you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Was the only other thing bodybuilding?
No, so bodybuilding I fell into because of wrestling. And I've told this story loads of times on when I do like podcasts and stuff. And again, I think because I grew up watching wrestling, I just became conditioned to how wrestlers look. So from a young age, it was like, when I was a kid, I didn't think Stone Cold was a jacked up guy. But you look back now and it's like, he's a big guy. Like he's not like got ripped abs and things, but he's like a jacked up guy. Triple H before his injury, The Rock, like these are all huge guys. And I just grew up like, well, that's what men look like.
Mm.
So I think from a young age, and then when I became a teenager and you say Batista, John Cena, it's like, oh, they're clearly like muscle guys. From a young age, I was just conditioned to what wrestlers look like. I want to look like a wrestler. So I started training and lifting weights because I wanted to look like a wrestler. But when you just start lifting weights, you don't have a clue what you're doing. So you go online, you read, right, how to put muscle on, how to get abs, how to get ripped, what do I need to eat, blah, blah, blah. By researching what I need to do with a diet, by researching how to lift, that's how I found out what bodybuilding was. And I was only looking for that, to look like a wrestler. So then when I found out about bodybuilding and how to train, you then get exposed to, oh, well, these are bodybuilders and these are what they look like. And then it's like, oh, well, that's a freaky look. So the more you get into it, the more time I was dedicating to the gym, I was like, oh, I'd like to give bodybuilding a go. I'd like to compete as a bodybuilder and see what it's like to get on stage, do a show. Can I be strict enough or dedicated enough to get on stage and, you know, do a bodybuilding show? So that's how I got into bodybuilding in a roundabout way, because I started lifting weights like a wrestler. To learn how to lift weights properly, you start researching it. I stumbled across bodybuilding. And then I just kind of fell in love with, you know, lifting and that whole lifestyle.
With obviously the physique is something that wrestlers will have, like a bodybuilder style physique. It plays into that. Obviously the natural charisma to be a bodybuilder also comes from that as well. But are there any aspects in which the wrestling and the bodybuilding lifestyle don't really mesh?
Oh, yeah. So as beneficial as lifting weights and looking good is for wrestling, because you hear that stereotype for years, don't you? Like, Vince likes the body guys and like
big sweaty men.
Yeah, it's one of those things like from a casual. It's maybe it's hard for like you know the cultaholic audience to appreciate because they're so ingrained in wrestling and they don't care what wrestlers look like because they just want the pure wrestling talent. And there's nothing wrong with that. Mm. But if you take a step back, and I think like the amount of friends who message me or people like in an office setting or a work colleague or whatever, and they'll say, oh, I saw this poster or they saw a clip of me or they'll see me sharing pictures and they're like, you look like a wrestler.
Mm.
And that's not a knock on any of the other British talent I'm on shows with. It's just people. Because, and I think because of WWE and how mainstream it is, they just have this preconceived image of what a wrestler, like the stereotype look of a wrestler, like someone with a bit of muscle, bigger than a normal guy. That's kind of the look that you've got. If you were to describe what a wrestler looks like, you'd probably think of like, oh, well, Hulk Hogan or something like that. That's just the stereotypical look. And that's because the casual fans, the casual audience. So obviously lifting weights and looking in shape is beneficial for wrestling. But to compete as a bodybuilder, there's a difference between bodybuilding and competing as a bodybuilder. I would say competing as a bodybuilder is detrimental to wrestling because of how lean you get close to a show, how lethargic you are, how limited your food is. That 100%, I think, is detrimental to wrestling. And I think it's because you take it to the extreme. You can train and you can train like a bodybuilder or a powerlifter or whatever, and you can diet well to look good. But when you're getting ready for a bodybuilding show, I think at that point it becomes detrimental because you're spending so much time in the gym, so much time with your food. The mental focus is on this bodybuilding show. It just drains you mentally, physically. And at that point, I think it becomes detrimental to wrestling. And one of the reasons, because when you get so lean and you're limiting your calorie intake, you're more susceptible to injury.
Yeah.
Which obviously, if you're lethargic, you're fatigued, that's not good for walking into a wrestling match or trying to perform on a wrestling show. So I think if you go to the extreme, which I obviously have done with bodybuilding shows, it is detrimental.
So how do you balance it? Because I know you've done, I'm sure that you've done.
Because I'm the Jack Stack, motherfucker.
I'm the fucking best, you jackass. Because I'm sure that you've done, like, I seem to remember when you won your NABBA trophy.
Yeah.
It was like, on the back of, like, you came to a North show not long after that had happened.
Yeah, so...
So you'd have gone through all the training for that, but then gone, oh, I'm wrestling, days later or whatever.
So I'll top you with that. I competed in the NABBA Mr. Britain show this year.
Yeah.
In Bradford. Won that show, so became NABBA Mr. Britain. Jumped in my car, drove an hour and 50 minutes, which I did in about an hour and 30 minutes. from Bradford to Newcastle to wrestle. So that show was literally, I was coming from a bodybuilding show that
hours
I just won.
After.
Hour, like a couple of hours later, the show photos from that, I look like I'm a different ethnicity because of the bodybuilding. Like obviously there'll be a lot of people watching who don't follow bodybuilding. When you compete on a bodybuilding stage, you have to apply a lot of tan because of the lights above you just drown out your physique. So you need to put the tan on to create the shadows and so your physique can come across on stage. So the tan is very, very dark. The tan doesn't actually set. You put it on and it doesn't, it's like an oil. It's a really weird kind of texture and it's so, so dark. There's photos of me that day where I literally look at different ethnicity because of how heavy this tan is. And it's the day of a bodybuilding show. So I'm so like striated, I'm so ripped. And then literally a week later, it's a completely different look because that look that you create on stage for a bodybuilding show isn't sustainable. You might spend 2 weeks messing about with your diet to just try and peak for that one day. And then 2-3 days later, you look like very different. So yeah, the bodybuilding stuff, like I said, there's a couple of years ago, you were ring announcing me at one of the North shows.
Yes.
I came out with a trophy because I'd compete, I think it was like a week or 2 weeks prior. And then I think it was the week before I'd done the NABBA North Britain.
Mm.
And then this year, literally wrestled the same day that I did.
So was that the North show? Where was that a different company?
It was
Newcastle. There's a couple that run in Newcastle.
So it was a one called Prime.
Prime.
It was, I had a feeling that was this year. That was this year. Yeah. The one where I wrestled the same day as a
So how was that match though? Knowing that you've been on this sort of tweaked, stringent diet, doing this show, and also quite drained from the whole experience. Yeah, yeah. How was that?
The match the performance in that wrestling match was better than what it would have been if it was the day before. Because the day before, I'd have felt depleted.
Right.
Whereas the day of the show, I'd carved up, I'd ate a lot. I was coming off this buzz of winning a bodybuilding show. I was eating, I had food in me, so I was ready to go. Whereas if it was the day before, it would have been a different story.
Because that must affect like personal life as well. Oh, yeah,
massively.
You know, you mentioned Alice, who's your partner, and so she must be a great support during
100%. Like Alice is like the best person I've ever met in my life, and she is so supportive of wrestling, of bodybuilding, of letting me just get on. And like, she knows like how much of my life this takes up. And to find someone who does support you so well, and like, I'm trying to chase my dreams, so having someone there to not just let you get on with it, but actually actively support you while you're doing that, to come to all the wrestling shows she comes to with me, she'll film all my matches so I can go home and watch them, send them to other wrestlers so they can critique them for me and get feedback, help me with my food prep, you know, absolute, like, yeah. I probably wouldn't be able to do all of this stuff without having hair support there.
You need that. You need people like
100%.
That.
100%. Everyone needs an Alice. Everybody needs an Alice.
Oh, that's nice, that. We're getting loads of phrases tonight. Yeah, it's fuck you, Mark, and everyone needs an Alice.
I'm just like walking, talking.
Just all the catchphrases. Yeah. Want to talk about how, like, you got your feet interested, because you're not, in the grand scheme of things, you're not that long into journey. And I want to talk about it. But before we do, we need your second match.
We do. We need the second match.
The fail four-way from WrestleMania 2000 was your first. Yeah. What's your second one going
to
be?
So I know I've got two more matches to pick. I'm going to go with, in my head, there's three other matches I could potentially pick, but I know I've only got room for two. So I'm going to go with Cena RVD from One Night Stand.
Oh, a fine shout.
It is, it certainly.
Why
is
that one though?
So this, for me, it's the crowd that makes this match. This was obviously a time where Cena was Super Cena. I look back now as an adult and a wrestler and stuff like that, and The Rock is my favourite wrestler as a fan. But Cena is probably maybe the person I've got most respect for in terms of him being... Now, because I can relate a little bit more with me being a wrestler myself. Mm. I have so much respect for Cena for what he went through, getting shit on by fans every single night, but not like bitching about, like actually playing up to it and being able to thrive in that kind of, you know, that time. Cena RVD... It was one of my favourite matches ever, because when I was a kid, RVD coming through in the Invasion instantly became one of my favourite wrestlers. Cena, when I was younger as a kid, I was one of these who were like, oh, Cena sucks, blah, 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 he's getting rammed down with throws, blah, blah, blah. But now I look back at it and I'm like, yeah, Cena's the man. Like, Cena is so, so good. But Cena RVD was class because of the match itself, from like a wrestling match point of view, really good, really enjoyable match. The crowd made it so much better. That arena, like if Cena wins, we riot signs. The crowd made the match. And because this was like RVD's time to become the man, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like, I know he wasn't like the face of the company, but he'd had title shots in, I think it was 2003, when he was like feuding with Triple H and things. There was a couple of times where they could have probably made RVD the champ. Whereas this was like... It was perfect. It was the ECW, pay-per-view, ECW arena,
Hammerstein Ballroom.
It was just like his moments. It was class because it was good wrestling, but it was good sports entertainment as well.
Phenomenal sports entertainment.
It was class.
I remember Cena walking to the ring, head down, belt up,
yep,
cap all the way down, and just vitriol.
Yeah,
just pure hatred
yeah
from everybody. And the other thing I equate it to was something that you and I were at just the other day.
Yeah.
Which was Clash of the Castle in Cardiff.
Yeah.
There was even a, if Roman wins, we riot.
Yeah.
Sign.
I think, so I've seen that sign. Obviously, the first time it was shown was at that ECW pay-per-view, if Cena wins, we riot. Then when Cena wrestled Edge at, I think it was, it was a TLC match. I can't remember the pay-per-view, might have been, it was, I think it was before TLC. Whatever the pay-per-view was, it was a TLC match or a ladder match. If, I think it was, if Edge wins, we riot. It was Cena's hometown. And you just knew that that crowd is not going to riot. You just knew it. If Roman wins, we riot. Nobody rioted in Cardiff.
My version was, if Roman wins, we write a strongly worded email.
Yeah. We've wrote a strongly worded tweet. Strongly
yes. Worded tweet. We'll put, we'll, if Roman wins, we'll write a pithy tweet about it.
If Cena won at that ECW,
there would have been a riot.
There would have been a riot. Oh. There would have been fans going absolutely mental. And that's what made it, because that crowd was so visceral. That crowd was so, like, I don't want to say they didn't give a fuck, but that crowd would have done something. That crowd would have went mental. It was just like, it was that thing that you'll probably never be able to replicate or recreate that vibe. Like, do you know what I mean?
I think they came close with something like Clash of the Castle. I don't think there was ever going to be a riot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in terms of that electricity.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree with that.
That I was just, yeah. It was palpable. And yeah. It was, the difference being like, if Cena had won, as you say, there probably would have been chairs ripped up and thrown.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It would have been a scene. I believe when Roman won at Clash of the Castle, it's certainly the crowd near me, it felt like losing 5-0 away. It like was, your team losing 5. I haven't heard somebody just stand up and go, oh, fuck off.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck off. As they were leaving.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it was that sort of energy it of like classic, your team so lost away.
Where I was at a clash, there was some Roman fans near us. So when Roman was doing entrance, they were all like stood with the, but the crowd was massive. I would say it was like in 90 or 95. I think on TV watching it, you wouldn't be able to hear any Roman chants.
No, I had none.
As you sat there, you see there's Roman fans around, which is fine. Like, you know, you like who you like and stuff like that, and that's fine. But yeah, I agree. Like, that vibe at Clash was totally a McIntyre. I marked out so much when Broken Dreams came on. Because
oh, it's great.
He obviously has been teasing this for months, like, and I remember it was a while ago, he was like, he wants to bring that song back. Then he's been teasing it over the past few months. And one of my mates, who I used to go and watch house shows with, literally 12, 11, 10 years ago, he was there, but he sat somewhere different to me. As McIntyre was making his entrance, so the old music hit, I was up singing along. Then my mate had messaged me saying, I love McIntyre now, by the way, like, which is why I was marking out so much for him. But my mate messaged me and said, remember when this jabroni was jobbing at house shows? Who would have thought he'd get jacked one day? And I looked at that and I just burst out laughing because it was like, fuck yeah. Like, McIntyre, I wasn't a really... McIntyre, first time round, was one of those guys who I just was like, I don't really care about because of how he was presented and booked. Like, it wasn't because he was a bad worker or a bad wrestler. It was just, I don't really care about the character, like, and I didn't really care about him 10 years ago.
Didn't connect at all.
And McIntyre came and said that, but I think looking back now, like, he was a kid then. Like, he was in his 20s, yeah, but he was pretty much a kid. Now he's like, he's a man. And the development he's had, and it's like, he got sacked. He was like, fuck this, I'm going to do something. I'm going to show them that, like, what I can be. Worked the indies. He was just finishing his indie run when I first started getting into wrestling myself. Mm. He had that indie run, became one of like the biggest indie stars, got signed by NXT again, went back to the main roster, and he's just been like upwards momentum pretty much all the way since then. And McIntyre is one of me, like, I always say to Alice, like, if I was booking WWE, McIntyre would be my face of the company, like, more so than Roman. Like, I was like, McIntyre would be the guy that I feature, you know, in that face.
In, like, would you have had him win on Sunday?
Okay, so yeah, if I was in charge, yeah, I'd have had him won. Because Roman's had this like massive spree, and Roman was getting hated on before he came back as a heel, and then they turned him heel, and like, yeah, he's like the biggest star in the industry, he's done some class work. But having this big event would have been like that fairy tale storybook end, a bit like when RVD won at ACW,
exactly.
That was like, right, that's that moment. That this would have been like, it might have been an obvious win, but would have been that feel good kind of happy ending to something. But you hear rumours of they're looking to do Reigns versus The Rock at Mania. And it's like, well, if that's the plan and they know that they're wanting to get there, then it makes sense to have Roman continue that until he wrestles The Rock. Or if they want to put Cody in that position and make Cody the big star, then I can see why they didn't pull the, like, I can see why they didn't have Roman lose if they want to do something else with them. But if it was up to me, I'd have had McIntyre. What about you? What would you have done?
I picked, in the predictions, I'd have picked him to win.
Yeah.
And as the night wore on, where like the crowd are so hot for it,
yeah,
they've got like people from SummerSlam 92 in the crowd.
Yeah.
They have like all the clips of Drew growing up.
On about someone, I seen a tweet. It was a guy who had took his daughter to SummerSlam 92 when she was obviously a kid. So his daughter then took him and her daughter to Clash at the Castle like all these years later.
That's lovely.
So it was like now the granddad's this 30-odd-year-old woman probably, maybe she's 40, and then her little kid as well. Like that.
That's like it was such a special night for so many reasons like that. But to have Broken Dreams in there, even like the optics that us dickheads at Cultaholic look for, like Sheamus lost. That means Drew's winning.
Yeah, that means Drew's winning.
Because if Sheamus had won, that should feel good.
Yeah.
All the optics pointed to, holy shit, lads, Drew's winning.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got drunk on that idea.
Yeah.
And when it didn't happen.
Yeah, we thought the same. Like, we thought it was like before Undertaker lost at Mania Lesnar.
Yeah.
Every year, me and my mate used to make a joke like, oh, if we're going to make some money, we'll just put a bet on Undertaker. Because it was just obvious. You just knew, oh, Undertaker's winning.
Yeah.
No matter what the build-up was, it was like, Undertaker's winning.
Put a bet on Taker.
That's what it felt like going into this. It was like
such a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, that's what it felt like.
And then when it wasn't,
it was fucking mental.
Oh, do you know what? I am so happy that I got.
But
I love that at this age, I can still be got.
I think if I was watching at home, I'd have still enjoyed it. But being there live, I was able to like properly get invested in it.
That last near fall where it just...
The full home stretch of that match with... It reminded me, and again, this is probably why I said Mania 2000 is me nostalgia. It reminded me, and I said this to my friends, it reminded me of like an early 2000s overbooked sports entertainment pay-per-view finish where it was like, there were so many near falls that you literally bought into and like, this is it. Then something else happens. Then there's a ref bump. Then there's a run-in. Then there's this. Then there's that. And it was like... all of these things happening, but everything that came after it then escalated it and then escalated it. And it was just that pure, like, entertainment, like, this is absolutely class. So it was one of those things where it's like, I never watch wrestling and get, like, you know, people watch football and their team loses and that's them pissed off for the rest of the weekend. I never watch wrestling, like, if a wrestler I like loses, I'm never pissed off. I'm just like... laughing and I'm like, I appreciate that too.
Yeah.
So that's what I was like when Roman won and I was just like, I wasn't pissed off at all. I was just like, that was class. It was just a class, like, it'd be the same as if I was watching Star Wars and so I'm a massive Star Wars mark. Obi-Wan series earlier this year, Vader and Obi-Wan had like a rematch. Are you a Star Wars fan?
Yeah, so you watched it all? Just before spoilers? Yeah, so it's fine. I've seen Obi-Wan. So they have the rematch.
Yeah, so I thought, right, it's obvious Vader's going to win this rematch. Obi-Wan's going to somehow escape, but like Vader's going to come out on top. And he didn't. And I wasn't pissed off about that. I was just like, motherfuckers, they got me.
I enjoyed it.
And I was entertained for what it was.
They got you.
And that's how I felt watching this McIntyre reign. But it was class. It was absolutely class.
It's great when they get you. Go back to the RVD Cena match.
Yeah.
So where would Shreddy have been watching that for the first time?
So I will have been... I'm trying to think where I actually was. So I remember...
So 2006.
WrestleManias back then, we would go around one of my friends' house all chipping and buy it. Mm. But we didn't. We definitely didn't for this. I'll have probably just been at home watching it the day after it will have aired live.
Yeah.
Just at home with your parents. I'll have been watching that then.
Yeah. And so by this point, your aspirations of being a wrestler were still very strong.
So by this point, I'd already started training. And so I did my first wrestling training session when I was 14. It was either 14 or 15-year-old. I can never remember how old I was. But I was still in school. I was in the last year of secondary school. So I think I'll probably be 15. I found some... local training company called 3CW.
Do you remember 3CW?
So it was 3CW. We're running training. I went, my dad took me and my friends. There was like four of us who went training. Took us to the first session. We all loved it, all enjoyed it. The second week, we got the bus there from Hartlepool to Middlesbrough. By the time we got the bus back, walked from the bus station home, Monday night, attended Tuesday morning. It was after midnight on a school night. I walked in, didn't have a mobile phone. Mum and dad, not my dad, but my mum went mental with me. You're not doing this again. You're not in the school night. You're not, you, that was it.
So because you're back so late.
Back so late on a school night. My mum probably started being killed or stabbed or murdered or something. And that was the end of wrestling for me. They wouldn't let me go back training. So I had, for like I say, from a young age, I wanted to do it and had literally trained twice. And my mum and dad put a stop to it. And that was the end of training for a couple of years.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So what made you, what got you back into it then? What made you pick you back up again?
So what got me back into it was a few years later when I was a uni student and I was a bit more independent, could go where I wanted, had sort of like a little bit of money. I didn't have much money, but I had a little bit of money. Started training again in Middlesbrough. Was going well, trained for a few months. The two head trainers where I trained stopped training. Training then went from training to a group of lads messing about in a ring. And I very quickly, it's crazy because it very quickly soured me on wanting to be a wrestler anymore because it just became a group of mates. And I don't think any of those trainees actually went on to do anything in wrestling. But the two trainers were really good. They just stopped running the train for whatever reason. And what was left of training was just lads messing about in a ring. And I was like, this isn't wrestling training. This isn't going to get me anything. And at the time, I literally didn't know anywhere else that offered training. So that was the end of wrestling again. I would have been 20, 21 at the time. What got me back into wrestling to where I am now, there was a NGW show running in Hartlepool. Me mate messaged me and said, there's this local show. Can we join and go and watch it? I was like, oh, yeah, we'll go and watch the wrestling. Went and go and watch that show. And then they were flyering like on the seats in the like in the venue. And there was a Facebook page, so I followed them on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, and they mentioned training. And I looked to see, like, oh, where's the training at? It was Chesley Street. So I looked, all right, where's Chesley Street? Oh, so yeah, half an hour drive, start training, and then here I am now. So that's what got me back to it. Because I found somewhere to train.
Because NGW is kind of like a sort of a hangover from sort of the Butlins camp shows and stuff of years gone by, isn't it? So the one thing that whenever people have been on and talked about NGW is it's brilliant for getting reps.
Yeah.
So like you'll do like you'll go and do like 5 or 6 nights on a run or more.
So I never had a full Butlins run with NGW.
Yeah.
But I have done a few Butlins like shorter runs. So like a run might be say 6 shows a week. I would maybe go and do 2 on the bounce or 3 on the bounce 1 week and then head home and then the next week go back. So I never did like a full run of Butlins like some lads done. They would do 6 weeks straight. I was never fortunate enough to be able to do that, but I have had time at Butlins doing that.
It's nice we get to talk about them because I think a lot of American wrestlers don't appreciate
the
power of the Butlins run in the case that you'll get like 5, 6, 7 days or more
of wrestling
night after night, sometimes twice a day.
Yeah.
And it's just like, stereotypical good guy, stereotypical bad guy, just completely basics, build on those and just get your reps in doing
it's
that.
Just a funny audience.
Really casual, lively, energetic crowd.
It's a casual audience in the terms of there'll be people watching who aren't wrestling fans. They're just away in Butlins on the holidays. That night are the wrestling, the entertainment. The night before might have been a singer. The night the next day might be a comedian, whatever. I don't know. So it's just this night, all right, they've got wrestling on tonight. So they might not be wrestling fans, but because you've got that basic of he's a good guy, he's a bad guy, this guy's kept with the microphone and told everyone to shut up. Oh, we don't like him, so we're booing. Oh, this guy comes out and he's going to fight that guy. All right, let's cheer this guy. And it is very basic, but it's so good for, like you say, getting those reps in. It's so good for work, being in front of a live crowd, being able to wrestle matches, being able to wrestle matches with guys who've got so much experience. So it's really good. And NGW in the Northeast was the school that that was the closest school to me, and it was one of the best schools in the country as well. So that's what got me back into wrestling in end of 2016, like very end of 2016, like end of September, October time. 2016 is when I found that I went to that.
Where did the name come from?
So Shreddy Breck.
Because for as long as I've known you, you've either been Shreddy Breck or just Shreddy.
Yeah. So it's more Shreddy now. As opposed to Shreddy Breck, but it came because my mate who messaged me, calling Drew a jabroni, he always used to message, he would always ask me like fitness advice, workout advice, blah, blah, blah. I would tell him, he would ignore me, but 6 weeks later, he would tell me, oh, I just watched this guy on YouTube and they said I should do this. I was like, yeah, I told you that 2 months ago. I told you that 6 weeks ago. So I just, like a flippant remark, I was like, right, I'm going to make a YouTube channel and then you'll start listening to me. And there was a box of Ready Breck on my desk. I was like, right, I'm going to call myself Shreddy. And it was just literally that. And
just
that's,
that.
That's how it came about, yeah. And that was the name. And I was
From Ready Breck to Shreddy Breck.
I like that name. And then I started wrestling.
Were there any names on the cutting room floor that you kind of, when you were bouncing around ideas that didn't happen?
No. So when I started training, so I was doing YouTube videos and like bodybuilding and fitness and just like vlogging and stuff as the Shreddy Breck channel. But it was like, oh, hey guys, I'm Adam from Shreddy Breck. So my name was Adam, but the channel
so
was
So the
Shreddy
channel
Breck.
Was called Shreddy Breck, but you and were Adam from yeah. Shreddy Breck. Oh, okay.
So then when I started training, I don't know how we found them, but Rory Coyle was also training at the same school. And he somehow came across me YouTube videos and was, oh, this guy can talk. And that's kind of what struck up a bit of a relationship from us. And because he'd seen these YouTube videos, oh, this guy's got like a bit of charisma, he can talk, whatever. That Shreddy Breck name, it then just became of like, all right, well, I am Shreddy Breck. And that's how the name came about. And then the wrestling name persona was Shreddy Breck. But then even people in the gym, before I started wrestling, would start calling me Shreddy anyway because they knew I did my videos and stuff. So I started wrestling as Shreddy Breck, but there was no names that I've left on the cutting room floor because I was just always like Shreddy. But there's been certain places I've wrestled that don't like the Shreddy Breck name.
Right.
So when people say that to me, I'm like, right, just call me something different then. That's not, if me being called Shreddy Breck is going to cost me a booking, we'll just change the name. I'm still me, I'd still act the same, I'm still the same person. We can just change the name. So I dropped the most places. I've dropped the Breck and it's now Shreddy. Mm. But yeah, it's just one of those things. Like, yeah, it's not a shoot name. Like some places like a first and a set, like a second name, but it's just something different. And if it was, you know, all right, you can go and work Noah in Japan, but you have to change your name. Okay, change my name. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'll go out. I'll still be Shreddy. I'll still act Shreddy. But if you want to call me something different, just call me something different.
It's you're not hung up on it.
No, I used to be. I used to because I felt like, oh, well, without Shreddy, bro, without Shreddy, what am I? Like, but coming back from lockdown, I'm much more comfortable and confident with like this persona and this like who I am as a wrestler. The name's almost irrelevant. Like, I've worked shows, if I had to change my name, I've worked shows where I'm called Atlas Adams. Mm. And to me, that's like a cool name.
That's
like,
a cool
it's
name.
A first name. It's a surname. So it can be like, right, Atlas Shreddy Adams. Or because I've got the Jack Stack Daddy, like moniker, it can just be the Jack Stack Daddy, Atlas Adams, and that's fine. Like, but if I like could Atlas control Adams. It forever, I would say, I would keep Shreddy in there somewhere, whether it's the Jack Stack Daddy, Atlas, Shreddy Adams, or just the Jack Stack Daddy, Shreddy. Like, I would keep Shreddy, but I'm not hung up on keeping it, if that makes sense.
First time I saw you, it was in a tag team with Big Lou Nixon, MMA fighter, Big Lou Nixon, as England's hardest man, AHM. You would come out to Casey and the Sunshine Band, which always got us popping.
Yeah.
Talk about developing that team.
So that came about because in real life, and you might have to bleep this word out, would that cause too much problem if I say it for a beep?
Depends what the word is.
I mean, for you to go back and scrub through just to put a beep in.
Ah, it's fine. It's
in real life, I'm a bit of a daft cunt.
You say cunt, that's fine.
All right, that's fine.
It's podcast, it's Patreon, it's fine.
Right, so yeah, in real life, I'm just very immature, people might say. Just, you know, like, I am what I am. Lou is a shoot, like, cage fighter, MMA fighter. I come from this bodybuilding background, but I'm not a shoot fighter or anything like that. So many people in wrestling, and this isn't me burying British wrestling, I don't just single it to British wrestling, so I'm not talking about anyone in particular. But I think it's just that thing in wrestling where so many people are hung up on being presented as, like, this super hard, super tough guy. And it's like, right, if that's what you want to be, go and take up boxing or MMA and prove that you are, like, in a real shoot setting, this hard guy that you are, kind of.
If it means that much to you to be seen in that way.
So we came up with this England's Hardest Men name as a complete spoof, parody or whatever, kind of like taking the piss a bit out of, like, that stereotype of, like, hard, like, people pretending they're hard, or people who legit think they're hard, but they're not, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And it's funny because when we first, before we debuted on shows, there was people at training who, I would happily bury these, but I don't even want to name them. I don't even want to name them. That's, like, how much they piss me off, but who caused a lot of shit for me and Lou when we very first set, literally before we even got on shows, they just saw, like, because they were already on shows, not really doing much, no gimmick, no character, anything like that. Me and Lou weren't on shows, but we had at least something. We weren't ready to wrestle on shows. We weren't good enough to wrestle on shows, but we had this, we were a character on North for months before we wrestled.
Yeah.
Because we had something, this England's Hardest Men kind of skit, character, persona, whatever it might be. So we were able to get, like, a foothold in some promotions to start with. And it was, Lou was, like, the straight shoot, like, the actual hard guy, and me as the gobshite, pretending that, like, we're a hard man. It would be me running my mouth, getting us into trouble, but I think I'm a hard man. But it was, like, Lou was the actual hard man. What was the question again? Sorry.
The story behind building this team.
So the story behind building it, you say, that's the story.
Yeah.
It was kind of taking the piss out with that stereotype, and it was something that me and Lou could bounce off each other, and it gave us, because we weren't ready to be on shows, as in wrestling, but we could do spots, we could do, like, promos, we were a character, and we were able to do something. So when we were ready to actually have a match, the fans already had an idea of who we are, they cared about us a little bit. But yeah, it kind of came about just of that. I don't want to say it was a parody, but it kind of was, if that makes sense.
It was, it kind of arced back to sort of wrestling of, like, the 90s, which was very personality led. Just, and do you think, because you mentioned there that there were people who were upset with the fact that you guys got put onto shows.
Yeah,
and
Is
it because, as you say, whilst you weren't ready in ring, you had something marketable that people wanted to market?
I think it's, and I've, when I very first started wrestling, I was told by my legit mates in wrestling, people hate you, or people will hate you. I was like, why? And they were like, you'll find out. And I was like, eh? Like, I started wrestling properly when I was 26. So I'd already had my career. I was working in the shoot job. And I was like, eh? That's just saying, like, why would, like, I'm not doing anything to anyone. Why would somebody hate, like, not just dislike me, because I understand you can just dislike people, you don't get on with people. I was like, why would someone hate me? I just didn't get it. I think it's because you have people who have been around for however long and they can't get on shows outside of their area, or they struggle to get bookings or whatever, no matter how much they go training or whatever. And for whatever reason, they're not being used. So when they see somebody coming newer, getting used, it's easy to just go, he's a prick.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and I hadn't done anything to these people. But
all you've done is come in and get on.
Just come in, like, you do your own thing. And I by no means was pretending I was a good wrestler. Even now, I always joke to some of my mates about it. Like, I'm not a good wrestler. And I think I'm harsh on myself with that. But back, I never once made out as if, like, I'm a mint wrestler, I'm a mint worker. Because, like, why would you go on like that in the first place anyway? But I think it was just one of those things because, like, you saw I came in, was able to have something about me that promoters wanted to use. And it was like, well, why are they getting on? Why are they getting booked? And these same people would say, well, what is England's hardest men? Why? What makes you England's hardest men? And it was like, before we debuted on shows, I think people probably just heard the name and were like, ah, these pricks, they think they're hard cunts. And then when we debuted on shows and they saw it was like a comedy thing, they were just like, oh, that's nothing like what we're expecting at all.
Mm.
And it was like, give us a chance to actually show it and do what it is before you start burying us.
It's must be frustrating when all you're doing is coming in and cracking on.
Yeah, it is, massively. And I had some problems when I very first started training because I came with a bit of a physique. And again, that was one of those things where a promoter might see a physique and be like, right, I'm going to put him on my poster. I'm going to book him without me having, like, they've never seen me wrestle, but like, oh, he looks like a wrestler for that casual audience. You've got some parents walking down the high street. Oh, that looks like the wrestling because he looks like a wrestler.
Mm.
And that, again, like some of my earliest bookings were based on how I looked. And I don't see that as a negative. Some people would use that as like a negative against me. Ah, Shreddy's only books of how he looks. Yeah, motherfucker. Like,
I'm getting booked.
I'm going to warn that. Like,
if what you want me to say? I'm getting booked.
Yeah, like, it's, oh, what's up?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I won't take the booking.
Yeah, or I'll stop going to the gym. I'll start looking like shit. Like, I don't know what you want. And that may sound arrogant to people, but.
No, it's one of those things where a lot of issues that people have with other people come back to issues they have with themselves.
Yeah, it's like, they don't look good, so I'm going to bury this person because he looks better than
and
me.
And what's weird is that with wrestling, like, we live and breathe it so much that if you're in it, you almost lose sight of the fact that, why aren't I getting booked? Why is that guy who looks like a wrestler getting booked to book me? Don't get it. It's how do you get lost in your up your own arsehole in some occasions?
You hit the nail on the head there. But I think now when you say like, oh, because he looks like a wrestler, you'll have people on Twitter going, well, what does a wrestler look like? What does a wrestler look like?
That guy.
And it's like, because they're so ingrained in... They're the hardcore audience. Mm. So to them, like, smaller guys who don't look athletic, can 100% they can still be good wrestlers. Kevin Owens does not look like an in-shape guy. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone.
No.
He's one of the best wrestlers in the world. But he's one of the best wrestlers in the world because he's probably 1 in 10,000 people. The problem is when you have fans who think, right, Kevin Owens doesn't look in good shape. I don't need to be in good shape. But what they're forgetting is they don't have his charisma. They can't talk like Kevin Owens. Mm. They don't have his wrestling ability. They're not good athletes. They just see it like, oh, well, Kevin Owens has got, maybe he's a bit of a belly. Kevin Owens doesn't have big arms. Neither do I. I can be the next Kevin Owens. No, you can't. Like, you cannot, like, at all. But I think because you do have certain talents who don't look like the traditional stereotypical in-shape wrestler, you have more people now kind of go, but what does a wrestler look like? What does a wrestler look like? And that's fine. Wrestlers need to look diverse. But I think what you mentioned there is like, when you're so ingrained in it yourself as a wrestler, and then it's almost that thing of like, why does that wrestler who looks like a wrestler get booked? Because you've probably got a family who don't know what, their only knowledge of wrestling is WWE. Probably can't name who the US champion is or who the tag champions are. But they know, oh, that's John Cena, or oh, that's Roman Reigns, or whoever. They're walking down the high street, they see a poster for wrestling, there's people on there who look kind of like the guys they see on TV. Oh, I'll take the kids to that because they'll enjoy it. So if a promoter wants to see me and, oh, right, Shreddy looks like that guy, I'll put him on the poster.
Mm.
So you'll probably have people who then think, right, why is Shreddy getting these bookings and I'm not? And I 100% hold my hands up, like, yeah, a lot of my persona, the Jack Sack Daddy character, persona, whatever you want to call it, is based around I look better than other people. And people don't like that, which is why I get booed. It's at the most basic level. I'm exploiting that, which is what, you know, that's why I get on shows, because people can boo that. And that's what my job is when I'm on a show, to get booed.
But that wasn't initially the case, because when I first, go back to England's Hardest Men, when I first saw you, you guys were incredibly popular.
Yeah, yeah.
And when a heel turn came around,
yeah,
I got a sense of a reluctance from you to pull the trigger.
100%. So
talk me through that.
Well, peek behind the curtain here. So this was the brainchild of Andrew Bowers, North Wrestling. And when he wanted to turn me heel, I was like, I don't know. Because in my head, I was like, I won't be a good heel. I just...
Is that why there was a reluctance? Like, you didn't think you'd be very good at it?
Because I think I was so... I was new into wrestling, but I was so... I don't want to say comfortable. I was so used to being a babyface, and that's all I kind of knew. And it was... Like, I'll use North as an example. Very quickly, we got cheered, and the crowd could have booed, and we'd have when we came as England's Hardest Men, the crowd could have maybe booed us, and if they did, we'd have went with that, and we'd have thought, right, let's get as many boos as possible. But they cheered, and then the next little spot we do, they cheer more. Then we do a little video package, and they like it, and it's like, right, we've got something here, so let's keep doing. So because we'd had, in the limited time I'd been in, we were getting good reactions, I was like, but this is working. And if we change, it's not going to work. I don't know what I'm going to do. If, like, I'm a heel. So I was like, oh, fuck, I don't know. Like, I don't know what to do. So Bowers, if he is watching.
Oh, he will be.
Clip this and tag him in it.
He will be.
Called me a natural heel. He said, I've scrolled back enough, or there'll be a message somewhere. He said, Shreddy has natural heel tendencies. How right he was.
Does that, because you wear your heart on your sleeve with so much of your stuff, and you're so proud of what you do and who you are, and how, like, I'm not here to hurt anybody. I'm not here to take a spot. I'm just here to do what I do. Does that still sting a little bit when you go, I'm not trying to be a bad guy, but here's a guy who says I'm very blatantly hateable?
I think.
Does that sting a little bit?
I think there's a couple of ways to look at it. Going back to that thing of, like, when I first broke in and people were like, people will hate you. If that was me 5-6 years ago, I'd be like, what the fuck? Yeah, they probably would. But now, when someone says I'm a natural heel, or I've got a natural heel tendency, I know exactly what they mean. Because, one, how I look. It's easy for me to walk out in front of a crowd, in 18-plus crowds, all drunk. Maybe they don't go to the gym. As I would call the North fans, skinny fat asses. It's easy for me to walk out and be a prick and them to boo me. So it's like, yeah, I can see there's, like, for certain crowds, it's like, yeah, it's easy for me to be hated by certain kinds of people.
So what I love with North, though, is that when, again, to go back to when I first saw you, like, people just, there was nothing but love.
Yeah,
and now you've crafted what you've done so much, you don't even need to say anything. You just need to be in the room.
If I could have that reaction... Every single show I go to, I'm fucking...
I've watched you take 3 steps onto the ramp.
Yeah.
And the whole show's had to stop because for 4 minutes, people are chanting Shreddy as a cunt.
Yeah.
Like, and all you've done is walk onto the ramp.
It's...
And that's not blowing smoke. Yeah, I was sat there as it happened going, our timings are fucked now.
Believe me, the one match I've had at North where I go back... And
I've had a message from Bowers. Sorry to interrupt you. I've had a message from Bowers where he said, we're running late, just rush through the announcements.
Yeah, yeah.
But I feel reticent to stop the Shreddy as a cunt chants that ring out for minutes and minutes and minutes. And I feel like I don't want to stop them because it's very good.
When out there, it's like I can try and stop them.
Shows run late, it's your fault.
You try and stop them, they don't work. So it's like, motherfucker, what the fuck? What can I do? I'm just that much of a natural heel, as Bowers called me. But the reaction and what I've done at North is the proud, like, it's the best achievement or the stuff I'm proudest of the most, because North was really the first show that gave me a chance way before I belonged in a wrestling ring to wrestle. They're the ones that allowed me to be a character. They're the ones that introduced me to an audience. Then off the back of that, other places saw me and RWs and me. But what I've been able to do at North, like, that was what got me into, that's what opened the door for everything else that followed it.
Yeah.
And over the years, obviously, I've had to improve, get better. It's not just a case of me showing up once every 6 weeks and being like, oh, we've got this fear. Like, I've had to improve as well. It's not just as easy as walking in and, all right, Shreddy, you're doing this, and then you do it. Like, that match with Warhorse, there was people, like, on Twitter and that night, and, like, Bowers, I think, even said it to me, like, that was match of the night for him. So to hear that from where I was, like, 2016, 17, when I wasn't a good wrestler at all. So then to hear the promoter say, for me, that was match of the night, like, that's class, to show like how much I've improved. But then also for that fan interaction, like, and yeah, it's a wrestling podcast. We know like wrestling's entertainment, so I can talk only about it. Like, whether you're getting cheered or booed, it's your job to go out and just entertain the audience. So it's like, I'm so appreciative of the opportunity that Bowers has given me. I'm so appreciative of the North platform, but of the fans who engage with that as well. Because I could go out and they could just be like, if they truly didn't like me, they wouldn't make noise. Mm. But it's the fact that like they give me so much of a good reaction, which allows me to put on a better performance for them. It's like the stuff I'm probably most proud of in wrestling.
And you are getting around a lot more because we've seen you pop up at numerous other promotions. Yeah, but sort of, what's the plan going forward? Because the UK wrestling scene is quite an interesting one at the moment.
So my plan, I got into wrestling back in 2016 because I wanted to work for WWE. And that's still the plan now. Like, I didn't get into it for it just to be a bit of fun on a weekend or just as a hobby, because it's too much of a commitment to be a hobby. Wrestling is too much of a commitment. It's too much of a head fork, physically, too much of a time sink just to be a bit of fun. For me, it's to live out that childhood dream of, I want to be a WWE wrestler. And that's why I got into wrestling originally. Obviously now, the landscape's changed. I had NXT UK. Now that's gone and it's changed to NXT Europe. But the goal for me is still, I want to work for WWE. And there'd be other indie wrestlers who might not think that's cool. Like, you know, there's that stereotype among some people who, WWE's not cool. Or, that's why I got into it. Because when I was a kid, it was my dream to be a WWE wrestler. And that's still my goal and dream now.
Obviously, the end of NXT UK kind of changes the platform a little bit, because I always thought that it might be somewhere that you shine.
you and me both.
Yeah, you and me both. Has there ever been any sort of any headway in that section of working for WWE?
Like a little bit, but
you're allowed to talk about.
I've never had a tryout. One of my goals was to get a tryout. One of my goals was to get a tryout for NXT UK. NXT UK has been and gone, and I failed. I didn't get the tryout. So in my head, I do see that as a failure, because I didn't even get a tryout with them. There was obviously a reason for that. Maybe they thought I wasn't ready. Maybe there was no opportunities. So that's fine. But now that NXT UK is gone, they're obviously going to be launching NXT Europe. It's like, okay, that never happened. What can I do to hopefully get a trial for NXT Europe? What can I do to get on NXT Europe? And I speak to guys, I'm getting advice, and I'm trying to do everything that I'm being told to do. So it's just that case of, I think William Regal always says that like, wrestling doesn't owe anyone anything. Mm. And I believe that. But I'm working towards what I want. And without putting that work in, I'll never get it. So all I can do is keep doing what I'm doing.
You're on the network now, though.
I am on the network. I'm on progress.
You can search Shreddy now, and there you are.
There you go. If you search Shreddy, does it come up?
I think so.
Does this? I don't think I'd have a profile. I'll have a tryout.
I'm going to try.
Someone at home who already knows the answer to this, Tom. There'll be somebody watching this.
There'll be at least three people.
There you go.
That have already tried.
That's like all the people watching this podcast.
And many more now. Yeah. Why? They have to hear you.
So it was actually, I think it was formerly known as Will Charlton, a.k.a. Rich Swift, the referee. He was the one who actually told me that it's on the network now. So I went and found the Progress Show. And there I was on the network.
You're not coming up. Oh, that's a really sad ending.
It's the end of episode
one of Welcome to Wrexham when they lost the playoffs. I was just like, oh, that's not quite there. But you're on there. The important bit.
Progress. Go and watch it. You'll see that we're not lying. I am on the network.
Let's talk about the failures. More the successes. Like, Progress is an incredible box.
Oh, massive. Yeah. Like, so this, I think I put something on Twitter the other day about this. Like, it's easy. And again, it goes back to what we said. When you're so caught up in wrestling, like what I'm doing now in wrestling, 5 or 6 years ago, I would be over the moon with what I'm doing. Mm. But now I've got it and it's just the norm to me. Like, yes, I'm on shows most weekends, or I'm doing this show, I'm doing this show. Like, but I'm not, my goal is WWE. So unless I get to WWE, if I ever stop wrestling, I'll see that as I fail at wrestling. Whereas really, I should look at it as like, right, if you told me when my first day of training, if you told me, Adam, you're going to be wrestling on Progress, I'm like, nah, I'm not. I'm not going to do that. And then I've done it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that should be, and I am happy about this, but it's just easy to get caught up in what you're not achieving and be harsh on yourself. And I'm guilty of that, like, all the time. Like, all right, because I've not got an NXT UK or because I'm not on WWE, I'm failing. Whereas really you should be like, right, I've just done progress. I'm a regular at North. I'm a regular at TNT. I've got this show. Like, I should be able to be focused on those positives rather than just focusing on the negatives.
Mm.
But it's easier said than done.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that's just for wrestling. I think that, you know, you might look at that when you were working in radio. But why is this guy on that show?
Oh,
and
yeah. Like, all the time.
You've done Heart. You've done BBC. Like, if I said, oh, I know someone's a BBC radio presenter, they'd be like, oh, fucking hell, like, they'd be impressive.
Yeah.
But your problem is, like, I don't know what the hierarchy is of BBC radio and stuff, but, like, what's the big show?
The Breakfast Show.
Have you ever done that?
I've done every other show apart from that one.
So you, like, when you were in radio, you might think, like, I'm not on the Breakfast Show. Like, what, like, I'm not on the Breakfast Show.
Yeah,
and that might have been a hang-up for you, whereas you've done all this other stuff, which is amazing. But it's like that one thing you haven't done, it almost like consumed you.
Yeah.
It's not just wrestling. It's like you at the radio, it's people. You're just in your normal 9-to-5 jobs. Like, this person's a manager. My man. Like, people will have it all the time. They can't be happy with what they've got. You should be happy with what you've got and always strive for more, but try and be happy with what you've actually achieved. But it's easier said than done.
How are you getting on with that?
With?
Being happy with what you've achieved and not.
It swings and roundabouts. Like, when I got progress, when I got the booking confirmation of progress, I was over the moon. I was buzzing. Mm-hmm. When I wrestled, over the moon buzzing. I've got ICW in progress. I was trying to get on for so long. And because I wasn't on them, I was like, again, I'm a failure because I'm not on ICW in progress. People would message me, oh, Shreddy, you're all over, you're dead busy. And I'm like, yeah, it's just like how you're perceiving me. Like, I'm not on this show, I'm not on this show, I'm not on this show, so I'm failing. But then I got on progress, I got an ICW, and I was buzzing. But then it's almost like, right, I've done that, what's next? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I am happy, but it's almost like, okay, I've done that, but right now, what's next? Like, I've been on progress once, how can I get back there? How can I become a regular on progress is like the next kind of like milestone or the next little goal to have.
What's next is for here, at least, is your third and final match.
Third match, okay. So
what have we got then? So reminder, the four-way from WrestleMania 16.
Yes,
banger that was.
Yeah, yeah.
Van Damme Cena from One Night Stand.
Yeah.
What's your third one going to be?
So there's two matches I want to pick.
Oh, he's going to pick one.
I will pick
Tell
one.
Us the two that you're struggling
okay,
with.
Okay, the two I'm struggling with. Austin Rock, 17.
Okay.
Hogan Rock, 18.
Ooh.
And Hogan, so a little bit like the RVD Cena.
Hmm.
The crowd is what makes so much of Hogan Rock.
Yeah.
In terms of a match, Austin Rock. But because the atmosphere and the crowd, like, Hogan Rock would get it on that. So to pick one, I'm probably going to go Austin Rock.
Yeah.
Because I kind of feel like as big as Hogan Rock was, Austin and Rock was like the peak of my childhood.
Yeah.
Whereas Hogan, again, because I didn't watch WCW much as a kid, I knew Hogan was this mega, huge mega star.
Yeah.
But as a child,
you didn't know Hollywood Hogan. Like, why is Hogan coming out to view the child, and why is it all black and white?
And it was like Rock Austin, two biggest stars in the business. Like, as big as Hogan is, Rock and Austin are bigger than Hogan. At least I think so. So, Rock, Austin, WrestleMania 17. And again, because, like I said, wrestling was always part of my life, but that late 90s, 2000, when my brother was watching it with me, then the year after, you've then got Rock Austin at WrestleMania 17, the year after the Fatal 4-Way, it's like that build-up. And it's like, I was just bang straight. Like, so, like, as a kid, that was what defined me almost, like watching wrestling as a kid. So I would go with Rock Austin as my next match.
What's a moment from that match that, even though you've seen it 100 times, still pops you?
So the obvious one is obviously the 10. But I think what gets me even more is towards the end of the match when the Rock is kicking out of stunner, after chair shot, until finally Austin just fucking kills him with the chair. And then it's like, when you're just seeing that over and over and over and over again, it's like,
that's a hell of a finish.
Yeah, yeah, it's class. So I would say that.
The finish.
Like the bit that pops me, just murdering him with the chair.
It was the commentary for me, as he's battering him, and JR goes, "What the hell is this?"
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Pins him, and Paul Heyman, "It's a new champion." Yeah. Like, ah. Oh.
It's just done a deal with the devil.
It's struck a deal with the devil. Yeah. Sold his soul to the devil. Ah. Oh. Thoughts on the heel turn in Texas?
So, again, as a kid, two things. As a kid, it's obviously different to what I think now. So, as a kid, The Rock was my guy then. Mm. As much as I liked Austin, when it's Rock versus Austin, right, I want Rock to win.
Yeah.
So, seeing Austin do that, it's like, what the fuck? Like, Austin hates Vince, what's done? Intrigue as to like what's going to come next. And then again, as a kid, because kids are stupid, we just buy it. So like, when I was a kid, it's like, yeah, I don't think of the ins and outs. I don't have the brain power to think about complex storytelling. It's just like, all right, they didn't like each other, but now he's just helped them become the champion. So that's as simple. That's all I need as a dumb kid. Going back and looking at it now, and like you've heard loads from JR on his podcasts and stuff like that, and I think even Austin says he looks back and he wishes he called an audible, and after the handshake, he wishes he just stunned Vince in the ring. I enjoyed heel Austin during that time frame for the comedy bits.
Yeah.
The stuff he was doing with Kurt Angle, the stuff he was doing with the Invasion. Like, for just entertainment, oh, that was funny. But like, as an overall, that complex storytelling, it didn't make sense. Like, looking back at it now, it didn't make sense, but it's easy to look back at stuff and go, oh, well, they should have done this or they shouldn't have done that. Like, at the time, Austin was the big star for so long. They had The Rock, who was also a huge, like, baby face. Because The Rock was getting cheated in Austin's hometown.
Mm.
It was in Texas, but The Rock wasn't getting booed. The Rock, it was like, I would almost say it was like a split crowd. There was more for Austin, but it wasn't like a clash where everyone was booing Roman.
Yeah.
The Rock was a face in that match.
It was partisan Austin, but there was still like some love for The Rock there.
Yeah, it wasn't like, so the year after, when he wrestled Hogan, The Rock was a heel in that match. He went in as a face, but the crowd treated him as a heel.
And they just worked it into the match, didn't they?
The crowd treated The Rock still as a face in that match. So that shows you how big of a like face like the Rock was. And obviously they turned Hogan in WCW from face to heel and that massive business for them. So it's like, well, on paper, like, oh, this is going to be mint because we're taking our biggest star, we're turning him heel. But he was just, I said this to Rory at North when we came back after lockdown and he turned heel, or he was planning to turn heel. I was like, I said, they're not going to boo you. It's going to be like when Austin turned heel. Because at certain people with certain crowds, they just don't want to boo them. Just like them that much. Like, it doesn't matter what they do, they're just going to cheer them. And that was obviously what happened with Austin for so long. He just kept getting cheered, even when he was a heel still, and then eventually he started getting the boos.
It took a while for him to find his feet again. And we've watched it week to week, me and Matthew Gregg, on the Classic SmackDown review, and like how he starts off as like this uber aggressive heel, and no one's buying that.
Yeah.
And then he just becomes a bit of a chicken shit. And like,
that's, I think for me, one of the things that stands out to me is when he started getting proper heel heat was when he brayed Lita with a chair.
Yeah, that start,
when he absolutely went mental with Lita on the chair. That was like, right, this is like, he's really, because when, until he becomes like a chicken shit, people, because they've seen Austin be like that anti-authority figure for so long, they love it. So he becomes this heel, but he's still a badass. So people like the badass.
Yeah.
So they had
to kind of get rid of that bit and make him like the guy that hugs Vince.
Getting a
petition signed to get out of a match and stuff like that.
But it's not like, it's entertaining because it's funny, but is that the best in terms of like drawing mega money? I don't know.
At this point in time, like WWF wasn't making a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
And whether or not it was the best thing, I don't know. They kind of maybe thought it was more of a conduit to create more stars.
Yeah.
But the company was just in a really weird, as a snake bit roster at that point.
So I think it was still really popular at 17, but then quickly as 2000 went on, because WCW had been bought not long prior to WrestleMania 70. It was like the week before.
I think it might have been days before.
I think it was the Raw before.
The go-home show was
the WCW, it's like simulcast one. But yeah, then as that went on, it was just like, it was almost like that boom period had died, or it was quickly dying.
It's very much remarked as the end of the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
That WrestleMania X7 is like the full stop.
Yeah.
of that, and then on to something new from there.
I'd agree with that.
And this feels like a nice place to full stop with you, sir. Genuinely delighted to have had you on today.
It's been a fun chat.
It's been a lovely time. Now people are going to want to find out more about the journey that you're on. How can people find you? What you got coming up?
On Twitter, so I'm probably most active on Instagram, but Twitter and Instagram, Shreddy Breck Gym. You can follow me on there. I've got my own YouTube channel, but I'm not as active on there. No, just don't have time, but Shreddy Breck YouTube channel. But what I've got coming up, got the Universe bodybuilding wise coming up.
Yeah, so that's when's Mr. Universe happening?
November the 5th.
Yeah.
As of when we're recording this weekend, we've got North coming up. I'm wrestling Joe Hendry on that. And then as the rest of the year goes on, big shows coming up, the TNT shows, and debuting at ICW in October, which I'm really looking forward to.
It's busy, could be busier.
Could be busier.
We'd like it to be busier.
We'd like it to be busier, but busy-ish.
I like to end on this little question. So let's go back in time with everything that you know now.
Yeah.
Let's go back in time, and there's a very young Shreddy sat with his brother. They've watching WrestleMania tape from the night before, the four-way, you fast-forwarded to the four-way. You can step in with all the knowledge you have now and give yourself one piece of advice to take you forward.
Fucking hell. I was supposed to think about that.
It's the aircon. It's fine.
Yeah. A bit of advice. It would have probably been not to have given up wrestling in, like, when I was 20 or 21, when... I feel like if I stuck with it then, if I found a different school, I'd maybe be where I wanted to be by this point. That's like, obviously, you know, if I had a time machine, but I can't change that.
Stick at it earlier.
Stick at it earlier would have been the ideal scenario. But if I could go back and talk like that little... So for just before we do finish, my brother, when I got the worm off Scotty Tootie, I sent him the clip of that. And he couldn't believe it. He literally texted me back saying, "You're living your dream." When I was a kid, that Scotty Tootie was one of the biggest stars, like Too Cool was one of the biggest like acts in wrestling. Taking the worm was such a surreal thing. Because I remember Friday nights watching Raw, Saturday mornings watching SmackDown. The amount of times that I had my younger sister on the couch, I was hopping around to the fair and then coming down doing the chop. And then, like, literally, 20 years later, like, I'm there in the ring, taking that worm, and the crowd's going, my mate's messaging, couldn't believe it. Like, my brother literally messaged me back saying, "You're living your dream." And it was like, yeah. So I suppose I was going to go back and say to myself, just stick at it, because it goes back to what we said earlier, like, it's easy to get hung up, but like, I'm not WWE because that's my dream.
Yeah.
But I look at, if I take a moment to think, like, fucking hell, I was in the ring with Scotty Tootie.
Yeah.
9-year-old Shreddy, my head would have fucking spun off if I knew that. Like, I wouldn't have believed this. And then there I was 20 years later doing that. So,
get ready.
Advice is, to answer your question, enjoy what you're doing as you're doing it, is the advice I would give to myself.
And at the brewery, when Scotty does that final, who roll out of the way?
Yeah.
Dodge the worm, you've got plenty of time. Shreddy, this has been lovely. Power handshake to end on.
Nice.
Look at that bicep.
Look at the striations.
That was a contraband on Cultaholic Island. The state of that.
Look at that.
Jeepers.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.